Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hello, this is Pete. I am one of the content producers here at Ethical Property Partners. As well as a podcast, we have our YouTube channel, and one thing that's been working brilliantly over there are our Sophisticated Saturdays. Now, this episode includes audio from a Sophisticated Saturday show where you'll hear about a deal that Frank has recently done. In the first part, you'll get all the numbers, so if you want to take part and work out how you'd do the deal, you can grab a calculator and make some notes before listening to the second part, where Frank will tell you exactly how he structured the deal in a sophisticated way. The third and final part is exclusive to you as a podcast listener, where Frank gets grilled by an expert investor and chats about the deal in more detail. So over to Frank.
Welcome to this Sophisticated Saturday episode of our EPP YouTube channel. My name's Frank Flegg, founder of Ethical Property Partners, where we help committed investors to make on a monthly basis what previously they couldn't even make on an annual basis. Now, I'll be honest with you, this particular transaction, 3 short years ago, I wouldn't have been able to make any money from. I would have spoken to the vendor, I would have looked at all the numbers and decided that there was nothing I could do for them. Yet 3 short years later, I've now got an extra tool in my box, in my toolkit, and I was able to actually help this vendor solve their problem and make some money for myself as well. And in this episode, I'm going to give you the opportunity to solve it, and then I'm going to explain how we did solve it. And this particular deal, I was paid for this very morning. I had an email in my inbox this morning. Now, I'm in Mexico at the moment. We're in Playa Car, which is a beautiful Caribbean town on the Mexican coast, and we're 6 hours behind UK. So it was early morning for me. I woke up and I had it as middle of the day for the UK. Checked my bank account and the money was in there. And so this is a cutting edge deal. We walk the walk at EPP. These are deals that we are doing right now. And so for you guys, if you come across a vendor, and they are everywhere, these vendors are everywhere, you have to know what to say to them, you have to know what questions to ask, and you have to know how to solve their problems. And in this episode, I'm gonna give you that opportunity, that live opportunity to solve it yourself, and then I'm gonna tell you how we did it. So, what do you need to know of a vendor? Well, first off, you need to know why they're selling. This particular vendor is in arrears. They're actually £5,000 in arrears, so they're being put under pressure by the mortgage lender. Their mortgage each month is £1,200. Now, these are numbers you need to be writing down, guys. If you're going to work this out, and if you're going to get top dollar value from this particular episode, and you're going to invest the time to watch this episode, to listen to this podcast, you want to get the most value from it. And the most value, the way you're going to get most value from this is to actually go through the exercise. If you sit there passively, and I get that you might be mowing the lawn, I get that you might be sitting on the bike or even swimming now. I've got these underwater headphones so I can listen to podcasts swimming. And so I get that you might not be able to grab a pen and paper. However, even if you can't do that, try and work it out in your head, because not everyone is great at these mental maths. But what I have noticed and what I can attest to is everyone can improve. And I've had partners join EPP and say, I can't do the maths. And a few months later, because they've practiced and practiced and practiced, they get really good at the maths and they can do these deals in front of the vendors, working out the sophisticated solutions. So what do we know so far? It's worth $335,000. That's what the vendor told us it was worth. We went and checked comparables, we went on HomeTrack, we went on Rightmove Plus, we used all the tools that a Rick Surveyor uses, and we agreed it is worth £335,000. There's £5,000 of arrears with the mortgage lender. The mortgage is costing £1,200 a month. It's an interest-only mortgage. Rental on this is only about £950 a month as a single AST. And so the obvious problem there is if you put tenants in it, it loses you money every month rather than makes you money. So that's a challenge for you when coming up with a solution. The redemption figure on this is £275,000. And so that's how much the mortgage lender requires in order to lift their first charge on the property. So if you're going to buy the property, you have to pay them £275,000. That's including the 5,000 arrears. So it's 270,000 plus the 5,000 arrears, 275. In terms of remaining time left on the mortgage, there's 3 years left. And so quite a short period of time before it comes to the end of its term, and that's not the fixed term, that's the end of the mortgage, so it needs to be paid back within the next 3 years. So I think that's the information that you need to structure this deal. So I'm going to pause for a moment. I want you to work out your solution, and then I'll come back and I'll tell you how I monetized this deal and was paid this very morning.
This is the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. To see more about our Sophisticated Saturdays, just search YouTube for Ethical Property Partners.
Hi guys, welcome back. So let me tell you how we solved this vendor's problem. You might remember all the numbers, I'm not going to recap them for you. So what did we do to solve this vendor's problem? Well, if we were to buy it now, at 75% of market value, which is how we buy, £335,000 value, that's £251,250 as a buy now price below market value. But if you remember, the redemption figure was 275, there's £24,000 difference there, and the vendor didn't have £24,000. They're not even paying their mortgage each month of £1,200. So that didn't work. Our full market value investors that we flip properties to, so we build portfolios for armchair investors, they're happy to pay market value. So you might have thought, we can flip to one of them, they'll pay 335, we'll actually make a nice chunk of money there, what's that, 50 odd thousand pounds, except that the property's cash flow negative. If you remember, the mortgage is £1,200 interest only, and the rent was only £950 a month. And so they're going to lose money every month. We're not going to give them a liability. We build profitable portfolios for our investors at a minimum of 8% ROI. And so that wasn't going to work at all. And so you might have thought, well, what about control now, pay later strategies? And there are some legs in that. However, the big problem with control now, pay later, you could turn it positive. So you could maybe run a HMO in the property. You could maybe find a tenant buyer who would pay more than the £1,200 a month. The difficulty is you've only got a 3 year period. And so any high monetization strategy normally costs some money to set it up at the start. And so if you're going to spend money doing a refurb, £10,000, £20,000, that's on top of the 275 that the mortgage company needs. And so that control now, pay later strategies, the risks are massively increased because it's such a short period of time. If you did a HMO, you would have spent the money turning it into a HMO. If you're going to find a tenant buyer, it might take you a few months to find a tenant buyer. It's costing you £1,200 a month, etc. So I didn't like the feel or the look of a control now, pay later strategy. I can't flip it to one of my investors and I can't buy it myself at 75%. So what can I do? Well, this is where the power of being an EPP works, because we are constantly investing in what we call our black book. And these are professionals, they're joint venture partners, they're lenders, they're investors that we can partner with on transactions, that we can employ on transactions. And what we did on this one is we went to one of our partners who has a database of investors. Now, there are loads of people that go, oh yeah, I've got investors. Most of them are full of hot air. They can't actually sell anything to their investors, but we try them out. Most of them waste our time and we get nowhere. But we do have a few who have proven themselves, have actually done deals, and case in point, we were paid this morning. So what we did is we took the deal to them and said, would any of your investors be interested? Now, this particular partner of ours has thousands of investors who've proven themselves to be really, really serious. And some of their investors don't buy for cash flow. Some of their investors want to buy at a discount, not 75%, not 25% rather, off, but they're happy to buy at a bit of a discount and then to hold a property that's slightly cash flow negative and sell it later and make their profit over the time that they hold it. And so they took it to some of their investors and they sold this at £300,000. So it's worth 335 and they've sold it at £300,000. That's not a bad discount. That's like 11, 12% discount. So the investor was happy. The vendor, they gave them £180,000. So the vendor actually got £5,000 in their profits. So they were over the moon. And we split the profit 50-50 with the company. Now, it took a while to go through because of the stamp duty holiday coming to an end. Solicitors are so busy at the moment. The buyer was actually buying other properties, and he slowed it down a bit, the investor. And so what we did was we offered the vendor an extra £2,500. So it was 282,500. We offered them an extra £2,500, and the investor paid £300,000. So we had the difference there, which is about £17,500. There were a few costs involved. We ended up with £8,229 in our bank account this morning for literally handing over a name and a number and making an introduction to this company. That was it. All we did was have a chat with the vendor, work out the price, work out what their pain was, work out why they were selling. We had a chat, another conversation with the company, and said, look, this is an opportunity. Are you interested? We put the two together. They've done all the hard work. It's taken about 3 months because transactions are taking a long time at the moment, especially when you're not the buyer. If you're the buyer, you can buy quicker. But when you've got a third-party investor, you can't force them to go any quicker than they're willing to go. But the company made £8,000. We made £8,000 for just a few hours work. And that's the benefit of having a black book of contacts that have proven themselves, that we call them bloodied, you know, that we've tested them with real live deals. They've actually got vendors across the line. So many sources, so many investor contacts of ours know the theory, but have never actually done a deal, never actually got deals through. But once you've got a relationship with a company like this, and you've tested them, and you trust one another, then you can really start to offer transactions like these with confidence. And so that's a great solution on a deal that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I would have just thrown away. I wouldn't have been able to monetize it. I have invited one of my MFAs, one of the country owners for EPP, to come and interview me and quiz me on this particular transaction and the elements that we're talking about within it. So I would like to welcome to the podcast, Pauline Chalmers. How are you, Pauline?
Morning, Frank. I'm very, very well, thank you. I'm very excited to be with you today.
It must be a good day for you if you still think it's the morning. It's the afternoon, but that's fine. I love it. I love it.
Is it the afternoon? Oh, it's been a long morning.
The day must be fine. So, Pauline, I'm going to hand over to you now. You've listened to the podcast recently. The guys on here have just listened to it this minute. They've got questions, I'm sure. Your job is to ask the questions that you think they might have. So, and my job is to do my best to answer them. So, far away.
It's a really interesting deal, actually. And it was clear in your conversation, or what you recorded earlier, was that it's not a deal that you would normally have attempted to monetize it because it doesn't fit our standard criteria. So my first question for you is, this vendor, how did you find the vendor? Were they already on the market?
Yeah, good question. They weren't on the market, and we found them through our direct to vendor marketing. So one of the things that we do at HQ, EPP HQ, is we market across the country. So all of our franchisees, as you know, are doing their local marketing. So they're doing their leafleting, they're doing their newspaper advertising, their post office advertising, whatever marketing they're doing at a local level within their territories. But we don't want to miss out on the opportunities to market on a national level. And so this came from our national marketing. So we do radio advertising, we do Facebook advertising, we do bespoke marketing to landlords through various channels. And this came from one of those advertisements. And this vendor, you know, gave us a call at national head office and said, I'd like to sell to you guys. I can see you're a national outfit. I can see you do things properly. I'm in a bit of a pickle. I'm in these arrears. Can you buy my house quickly? And it came from there.
For someone to be so open with you and talk about what their arrears are and what their financial situation is like that, that's quite a sensitive issue. Mm. How did that come about?
That is fascinating, actually. I listened to a podcast yesterday, a friend of mine. In fact, he's coming on the podcast soon, Joshua Sheets. He runs a really interesting finance podcast. And I heard him do a dial-in yesterday, whether or not he recorded it yesterday, but I listened to it on his podcast yesterday. And the gentleman he was chatting to, his goal is to enable his clients to be financially free within a 10-year period. He was hosting this podcast, and it was a dial-in for Ask Joshua Anything, something like a Q&A. And the guy that
was phoning in. There's obviously a lot of trust there because the guy must, you know, the guy asking the questions of Joshua must listen to his podcast. Maybe he's been a client, I don't know, but there's quite a lot of rapport. He's decided to dial in and ask his questions on the podcast. And the number of times he was like, oh, and I could tell he didn't want to give this information. Now, I get that there are other people listening. It's on a podcast, etc. Whereas when we speak to our vendors, it's on a one-to-one. But all that he'd given was the state in America that he lived in and his first name. So it's highly unlikely anyone's going to go, oh, that's Kevin from, you know, Arizona, because there must be quite a few Kevins in Arizona or wherever the guy was from. But he was really, really coy about, you know, how much do you make? Well, let's just call it 400K. And so if you sold all your assets and paid off all your debts, how much would be left? Well, let's just call it 1.5 million. It was really broad. You could tell he was nervous. And I did actually reflect on that. I thought that's interesting because I think most people are that nervous. And I think you and I know when we have new partners joining EPP, that's often one of their concerns. They're concerned that vendors are not going to share their financial situation with us because they only contact us when there's a problem that needs solving. And I think that comes from society, you know, stiff upper British lip. Is that right? Stiff upper lip, something like that. You know what I mean? Us Brits don't like to be brash, don't like to talk money. And so it's a very good question you ask. How do we have these in-depth, very personal conversations with people? I've been negotiating on a yacht for about 2 years. And COVID didn't help. It's in Portugal, so I couldn't go and see it. We very nearly got a price agreed. You know me, Paulie, I love getting the best deal possible. Mm-hmm. We very nearly got a price agreed January 2020. We remember what happened in February and then March 2020. So it all slowed down. And I contacted them 2 weeks ago and said, how are you getting on with the yacht? I can now get out to Portugal quite easily. I'd like to come and have a test sale if it's still for sale. Now, they haven't heard from me in a year, so it was a little bit speculative. And they said, it sold a week ago, Frank. So sorry, didn't know you were still interested. And that's fine. But I was really keen to know what price it had sold for because I was really negotiating hard. I was already at 50% of what they were asking and we hadn't finished negotiating yet. And so I just popped back a message. Now, I must have messaged this owner 20, 30 times. We've probably spent 2 hours on the phone in total over the 2 years. So there's a high level of rapport. And I went back and I said, oh, congratulations. This is on WhatsApp. Congratulations on selling the yacht. You know, I know it's been a long time. I know it's cost you a lot of money sat in the marina, you know, while you're trying to sell it. So sorry I couldn't get out earlier, but delighted for you. Do you mind me just asking what did it sell for? And I'm so interested in what it sold for because did the guy pay a lot more than me? Did he get it a bit cheaper than I got to, you know, tumbleweed? And I think it's the same thing. Like I haven't had a response and I'm not going to push for it. I'm not going to be rude. But I think it's that same thing. We as Brits, we don't like, as a British vendor, we don't like talking about money. And so when our vendors phone us up, they're very skeptical. They're very cautious. As you know, you've done hundreds of these phone calls yourself and you've trained the partners to make their telephone fact find calls as well. I think it's a combination of confidence. We are confident when we're on the phone and controlling the conversation. And I mean that in a nice way. So we follow a script. We're not reading a script, but we follow a process. And it's very clear that we know what we're doing, that we're professional. And when we get to those questions where we say, so what did you buy the property for? Why are you selling the property? Tell us how we can help you. It gets a very favorable response. Not all the time. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how often people open up. I'd say it's probably 7 out of 10 callers straight away will, you know, start telling you their life story. And then maybe 2 out of 10 on top of that need a little bit of prompting or a little bit of encouragement. And maybe 1 out of 10, maybe 10% are very coy throughout the call and perhaps don't give much away at all. But the vast majority of people will tell you what their house is worth, will tell you what their bottom line is and be real about it, and will tell you straight up if the 75% works or not. And this is a good case in point. It didn't work for them. The 75% didn't work, and they said why. And so we knew where they were at, and we knew what their problem was. And that, and they, because we had that honesty with the vendor, because we had the clarity on their situation, we were able to realize that there was actually a solution there using our black book.
When you speak to vendor, we speak to vendor on the phone initially, and then we meet them face to face or on Zoom if that was necessary. I think one thing you didn't mention was trust. We're very good at building trust, but that trust comes from confidence in our ability to solve their problem. And when we offer, we know we can deliver on that offer as well. If we can't solve the problem, then we're quite clear with them that, or if we offer and that's the maximum that we can offer and that doesn't work for them, then they're absolutely free to go somewhere else. There's no high sales pressure techniques that we use. So I think that the trust in ourselves and being able to deliver it will come across with the vendor as well, even with our new partners who are working off a script, but as you say, they're not reading the script, they're just using the structure of the call. I found it quite surprising initially, but it's become second nature now how vendors do open up when you have that conversation with them, because we have that level of trust in ourselves, that competence that we can deliver. And we usually have a solution, not always, but we usually have a solution, and we're quite clear when we don't. So I think that's what, and it's the structure of it that as everything at EPP is, or most things are systemized, then our new partners especially can fall into that system or drop into that system and use the benefit of all of our experience when they're speaking to vendors, which is what sounds like happened with this particular vendor.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Pauline.
So great. So you've spoken to the vendor and you've said when you met the vendor and you looked at the situation that they were in, it didn't fit our standard offer of 75% below market value. And also that they were short on the timescale remaining on the mortgage. They only had 3 years left before the end of term. A control now, pay later strategy wouldn't have worked. And it was hard to monetize given the fact that the rental income would be less than what a mortgage payment would be. So that's not our standard structure. So you then went on to talk about the little black book. So tell us more about the little black book.
Yeah, it sounds really mysterious, but it's pretty it's pretty simple. But yeah, it's come about from, it's got bigger and bigger and it's got more and more valuable as time's gone on. And actually it's in hyperdrive now, because as we expand into more countries and we have more MFAs on board running those countries, we at Global HQ can invest more time in relationships. And the little black book is our address book of property professionals that we can pick up the phone and speak to directly when we have an opportunity or a question or a problem. And they know us, we know them. They're trusted relationships. We're like platinum clients to them, or they're platinum clients to us, depending on which way around it is. We trust one another and go the extra mile for one another. And those relationships are worth hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of pounds. And this is a good case in point. Like, you summed it up and then like skipped over it just now. But actually, let's think about this. This is less than half of our normal discount. So for, you know, non-sophisticated investors, it's a value of 335 and a purchase price of 280. So that's £55,000, which sounds amazing, but that's like 10-12% discount. And we're looking for a 25% discount. So there's not a discount in it for us. It's like nowhere near enough of a discount for us to buy it. There's nowhere near enough time. 3 years is nowhere near long enough to make this a big enough BMV purchase. You know, there's not enough time for capital growth. And this is the kicker, it's cash flow negative. It loses you money if you buy this and rent it out as a single AST buy to let. It loses you money every month. So from every perspective, this is a dead duck. You know, it's a lemon. Who would buy this? And yet we've monetized it. We've helped the vendor and we've given an investor a deal that they're really happy with. I think that's a brilliant win-win, as well as our business partner on this transaction, the company that's in our black book, they've made a nice tidy sum. You know, we went 50-50 on the profit. So we took out our eight and a bit grand and they took out their eight and a bit grand. So there are four winners in this transaction. None of my contacts would have bought this deal, but they have investors. They're a sourcing company, very successful, quite large sourcing company in the UK, and they have thousands upon thousands of investors, and they know their investors. They know which investors want BMV, which investors want positive cash flow, and they sold this to an investor that was happy for it to be cash flow negative. Because that particular investor, their strategy is to buy BMV. He's got a 55 grand discount. That's pretty good in anyone's book. If he sells this in a year or two, he'll have made money, even though he's had to subsidize the mortgage each month between now and then. And I knew that there was a very high probability of this company in our black book being able to sell this to one of their investors. And so because there was a 35 grand discount in there for the investor, you know, it's worth 335 and he paid 330 for it. That was fantastic. And because there was 20 grand left over for us, it worked for everyone. So that's the value of having those relationships, having those contacts. I would have walked away from this just a few short years ago. And yet now we've got five deals going through with this particular company. This is the first one that's completed with them. They're about to go on our probation list, as we call it. So we have our black book, which is our, we call them blooded.
Tried and tested.
Exactly. Tried and tested people. You know, they've proven themselves. We've completed deals with them on numerous occasions with numerous franchisees. And so we know that they're a safe pair of hands. And then we've got the probational power team members, which we do open them up to franchisees so franchisees can use them, but it's without our guarantee. It's without us saying, look, these guys are a safe pair of hands. What we will say in this case is, look, we've got five deals going through this company. They're dealing really well with all five. We've had one completion. They paid us the same day. You know, that bodes well, doesn't it, for a long-term relationship. Same day of completion. And so feel free to try them out, guys, but give us your feedback. Once they've done a few deals with different franchisees and we've had good feedback, they'll then go into the black book and we'll be there for all franchisees to use with confidence. So I've gone in reverse order, but you've got the black book, which is, you know, these guys, we've worked with them loads with multiple franchisees. One step before that is these guys are provisionally on the power team. Feel free to try them out, but we can't vouch for them completely. And then before that, it's where these guys were just a month or so ago. We've found a new relationship. I've sat down and met with these people personally. My team have met their team. We're testing them out and they know that. I'm really open with them. I'm like, look, we've got all these franchisees across the country or across multiple countries. If they're international, we can bring you a lot of business. We can do a lot of business together, but that can only happen after we've done a few deals together. And so we always try them out ourselves first, make sure that goes well. If that goes well, they get on the provisional list and then they get in the book. So, yeah, these guys are now on the provisional list and the franchisees will have access to them, which is fantastic.
That's great. And it sounds like, and I know you're not going to name any names about who they are, but would they deal with Joe Bloggs, the investor? If I wasn't part of EPP and went to them, would they be interested in dealing with me as an individual who was sourcing properties to pass to their investors? Or are they looking to partner with organisations like EPP to create that ongoing relationship?
I think the answer is, logically, they will take business, they will take deals from whomever supplies them to them. The reality, though, is if Frank Flegg, so I was introduced to them because the person that introduced me gets some credibility and kudos for putting the two of us together, and I'm very grateful, etc. And so is this company, very grateful to the introducer. Funnily enough, it was an MFA. It was Ian Jackson, MFA for Northern Ireland, that introduced me to this company. I've just remembered. When Ian made that introduction, it was to the owner of the company, the CEO. So the conversation is different. It's okay, so Frank, how can we partner with all your franchisees? How can we, because the first thing they ask is how many deals are you doing a month as an organization? I go, well, there's this many franchisees, they're doing between generally 4 and 10 deals a year each. And so you can see their eyes light up when they realize how much, and it doesn't matter whether I'm speaking to lawyers, mortgage brokers, financiers, whomever, that's like, we're big hitters now in the industry. There are not many organizations. There are some, but there are not many that do as many transactions as us a year. And that gives us a lot of clout. And so straight away, the conversation was, right, let me put you in touch with, in fact, let me pull him into the Zoom call now. This is our top negotiator. I'm going to make up the name. I can't remember his name, but you know, this is George. George is going to personally oversee every one of your transactions. George, I want you to feedback to me on a weekly basis. Frank, if we have any problems, can I come back to you direct? Absolutely, you can. Let me introduce you. Maddie oversaw this from our team. So Maddie was working directly with George. So there's that really good communication. They both know that this is an important relationship for us. So they're working their socks off and making it a high priority. Could an individual who's either sourcing 5 or 10 deals a year, or hoping, even worse, hoping to source 5 or 10 deals a year, get that same relationship? Probably not. They wouldn't speak to the CEO. You know, he's not going to give them the time of day, or he's unlikely to. This company are doing a lot of deals a month. Very successful company. And that's the other thing. I ask to see their accounts. I chat to them and interrogate. Yeah, chat to them. Interrogate is more accurate. Interrogate their actual numbers from various angles. You can do it from a turnover perspective, and then do it from a number of transactions perspective. You can do it from how many team members you have, because I know how many team members it would take to do that, because we're in the similar business. You know, we flip properties to investors too. Ask them about their average transaction duration. Ask them about their net profit on each transaction. So you can very quickly, once you've done it a few times, get to the nub of, are they full of hot air, or are they serious in doing deals? And I've had companies where they've said, oh yeah, I'm doing XYZ. And I say, how long have you been doing that for? Oh, I've been doing that for 3 years now. And then I go, cool. Well, my accountant pulled up your accounts before this meeting, and that would mean that you were turning over 3 million a year, but your accounts say that you've turned over 100K. And it just goes really quiet. And I feel a bit guilty sometimes. But then I think, you know what? I'm wasting my time on this call with you, like trying to blow hot air. And it's not on, you know. We need to be open and honest in our communication. So I think I think that's a professional approach that I'm taking. I'm valuing my time. I'm valuing my franchisee's time. I'm looking for a serious professional relationship. I think when you approach it from that perspective and you have those high level conversations with the owner of the company or the decision maker, you get a certain level of respect back compared to your original question, Pauline, was could someone do this themselves? Of course they could. They could research these companies. They could speak to as many companies as we do. Bearing in mind, we're speaking to we're kissing a lot of frogs before we we actually do some deals with a prince. But an individual had spoken to this company, they probably wouldn't speak to the CEO. They probably wouldn't get to work with George. They'd get, you know, one of the less experienced, less capable negotiators. And therefore, even if that person does do 5 deals or 10 deals in the next year, the first one that they give to this company is less likely to work because the company aren't caring about it as much as they do an EPP one. So I think on paper, yes, it's possible. In reality, it's far, far less likely.
Hit the nail on the head. It's the level of care. That company's got a vested interest in nurturing that relationship because of the potential that's there. And as with every transaction, there's a potential for bumps to be hit in the road. And then it sounds like they would make sure, if there's are any bumps in the road with a transaction, there's a communication that wouldn't necessarily mean that other transactions wouldn't go through. Whereas if it's just a one individual with one deal, and it becomes a bit bumpy, then they're less, both of you are less likely to continue with the relationship as well. So
exactly.
I can see that they would nurture that, as would we. We would want to build on that relationship.
Exactly. So in this case, it took a bit longer because the investor had some delays. We didn't get involved in the investor. In fact, all we gave was a name and a number and a 5-minute description of the transaction to the company, and they took it from there. So we introduced it to the vendor as, look, we can't buy this, but we work with a company that can pay a bit more and still sell it really quickly. Would you like us to introduce you? So really congruent, not pretending it's us or anything. And then, you know, George picked up the phone the same day, had a chat with them, and you know, so Maddie had that conversation with them, then passed it to George. George gave him a call, etc. But they needed 275. George offered, not us, we offered the lower amount. We offered far, far less than that, the 75%. And they said no. George, when he phoned them, said, okay, yes, we can pay more than EPP. We can actually pay you 277,500. So it gave them £2,500 in their pocket, which is always nice when it completes, you know, rather than them just sign away a house, hand over the keys and earn nothing. But it took a bit longer than anticipated because of the investor. But because they're a professional company, they decided to add an additional £2,500, which took it up to the 280. Now that is the sign of a company that knows what they're doing, because I would much rather make my £8,000 than them risk me earning nothing and me earning what's half of £2,500. You know, it would have been £9,000. I'm really glad that they gave over an extra £2,500. So, and that's what you're talking about. You're talking about potholes along the way. Yes, they need to be overcome, and they are far more likely to overcome them with one of our deals, because they want all the future business. And no surprise, the CEO dropped me an email the same day and said, Frank, this completed this morning. I've copied Maddie and George in. We've already paid you your £8,229 from memory. And when can we be introduced to your franchisees? Like, it was straight in there, straight for the jugular. And I'm like, good on you, mate. Yes, I am now because he was asking me during the, you know, this deal took a few months. He was saying, look, these are going well, Frank. We've got 5 going through now. Can we speak to all your franchisees? I was like, nope, not until we've completed on one. And so, yeah, on the first day. And that shows the keenness he is to work with us. But I'm keen to work with him now. He's proven himself, you know.
At the beginning of our conversation, you talked about the win-win-win-win, the 4 wins. And that was for EPP, for yourself, for the investment company, for the investor and for the vendor. And that's the crux of it. We're not keen to do deals in EPP where the vendor walks away unhappy with what we've given them. You know, we're looking for a win as well, because exactly. One of the things we do offer our vendors is a referral, which quite often comes from our vendors in the future, where we've given them such a great service that they then refer other vendors who have a need for our service to us, and they receive a reward for doing so. And that comes from them feeling as though they've won in the deal. So that's great that they've done that. That's really, really, that's part of our ethics. And I'd be happy to work with them because of what they've been demonstrating. One more question for you. The Black Book, we've got a feel for it now, but who else might be in the Black Book? What other sort of professional bodies would we deal with in the Black Book?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you might not think of a deal packaging company, that's what they basically are for investors, as a professional, industry professional to have in your Black Book. But as you can see, it's quite valuable. All of the normal categories that probably spring to mind, and then some abnormal ones. So I'll just brainstorm some, and if I miss any, you shout out. But I'd say obviously conveyancers, but very different conveyancers. So some will be really good at getting stuff through quickly where you're buying the property. Others will be really good at buying the company. Those are two very different types of transactions. You need corporate lawyers in there that can do sophisticated JV agreements for you. You need litigators in there that will jump on it and get a letter out to someone who's trying to wriggle out of an agreement and not honor the agreement that you have with them very, very quickly. You need mortgage brokers who you can phone and just say, look, I've spoken to mortgage brokers before where I've said, I've got a deal I'm stood outside of it, you know, I'm about to walk in and see the vendor, but I've just noticed it's got a flat roof. It didn't show it on Google Maps or whatever. I didn't know it had a flat roof. Can you just confirm there's a lender that will lend on this before I make the offer? And they've gone, need you to submit the form, Frank. And it's like, oh, thanks, that's so helpful. Whereas, and obviously those aren't lawyers, that aren't mortgage brokers that are in our book, but others, I can phone them and I have all their mobile numbers. If they're in a meeting, they'll step out to take my call because they know I'm only phoning them when I've got business for them. And, you know, the contrast is, yes, there's this lender and there's this lender. They'll be able to lend at 75% or 80% or 65%, but only if it's single AST, not if it's HMO. And that's all I need. As soon as I know that, brilliant. Thank you for that 30-second answer. I can now go in. If I sign it up, it'll be coming your way. So that level of relationship with many different categories of professionals, you've got architects, building control inspectors, planning consultants, financiers, so bridging providers. You know, I can phone the CEOs of three or four different bridging providers and just say, look, I've got this deal, or a franchisee's got this deal. In fact, I had one where a franchisee phoned me up and said, Frank, the bridging providers asked for a Zoom interview. Have you ever come across this before? And this was Matt and Dave down in Southend-on-Sea. And I think it was Matt I was speaking to. I said, no, I've never heard of that before, Matt. I said, something odd's going on there. Who's the bridging provider? Because he said, why are they interviewing me? Like, what on my application has flagged this as, you know, odd? And so I said, who's the bridging provider? And it was a bridger that I knew. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. Let me just phone. I said, who are you meeting with? And he said, it was just someone in the office. I didn't know the name of the person, but I knew the MD. And so I just phoned the MD and I said, we've got this case going through. It's a franchisee of mine. You've asked for a Zoom meeting. They've got it with someone in your office this afternoon. I just wondered if I can help. And she said, oh, Frank, we didn't know it was one of yours. Yeah, this is the reason. And it made complete sense. It was a property that was off market. And so there was just a couple of little red flags on it that they were nervous about. And she said, but now we know it's yours. Yeah, no worries at all. In fact, just tell your client we've cancelled the Zoom. We'll get the offer out later today. And that's the benefit of having those relationships. There's trust there. She knows that we're not trying to do anything dodgy with the property. We're not trying to borrow the money and not pay it back, you know, et cetera. I've sat and spent time in their offices. I've met their CEO. We've done loans together before. So bridging providers.
Rick Surveyors is another one.
Yeah, Rick Surveyors. So you can get a second opinion, so you can get a desktop valuation so that you can get them to value stuff for you. And none of this is doing anything dodgy. It's no one doing things they shouldn't be doing, but it's just people being commercially minded and helpful and prioritizing you as a client. I tell you another one at the moment, it's personal guarantees for lending. Like, yeah. Some solicitors will say, no, we insist on seeing the client. Well, that's not very helpful if the client lives 4 hours drive away. Whereas we've got some solicitors now in our black book who you can, without any prior relationship, you can phone them up, book a Zoom in for the same day. And, you know, for 100, 150 quid, you can do a Zoom meeting, hold your passport up and show them. They will certify your ID, and they will also do a personal guarantee on a limited company. That's invaluable to be able to do that, you know. But the solicitors that do that are not that commonplace. They're allowed to do it, but most solicitors are not that way inclined. They want to do things the way they've always done them, which is fine, but they're not the solicitors that are going to get us these deals. We need things to happen quickly. We need to all be on the same side. I'll tell you another benefit is our solicitors copying us in and our mortgage brokers copying us in. We were testing a mortgage broker recently, email communication. We were testing a mortgage broker recently and he talked the talk. I have to admit, he was the family mortgage broker for one of my investors. And the investor's buying quite a lot. His goal is to buy 10 this year. And he said, look, Frank, I'm sure you've got your own team of mortgage brokers, but this guy's been representing me for years. He's representing my mom, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to use him. And I said, very blunt, I said, the likelihood is he won't cut the mustard, but for sure, let's try him out. But please be open to using mine, trying mine out. You know, you don't have to stick with mine, but trying mine out if it doesn't go swimmingly. And I said, I insist on being copied into everything you send him and everything he sends to me. And he'll need your permission. So please send an email now saying, I won't use the guy's name, but, you know, I'll call him George again. George, please copy Frank into every communication and I'll do the same, because he'll be advising me in the background on what we're doing and he's liaising with the vendor, etc. And this guy, George, kept not so... The investor would copy me in and then George would just respond directly. The investor would copy me in, George would go back directly. And it was just, he wasn't with the program. And lo and behold, we've had an issue on, he's only doing two. The third one, we said, actually, let's knock this on the head. Let's try ours now. But the first two, we've had issues with both of them. And on the most recent one, we phoned George up and said, one of my team phoned him up and said, George, we're about to lose this vendor. This vendor's been waiting way longer than they should have been. We know it's not your fault. So it's not like we're throwing mud. We know it's not your fault. It's just the way it's happened. But please, can you phone the lender and ask them to pull out all the stops for this? Because, you know, you've got a relationship with them. They want more business from us, etc. If they can, we know that they can prioritize stuff and put it at the top of the pile. And he turned around and said to my team member, we have no influence on these lenders.
Wow.
And I just thought, gosh. Well, for starters, why don't you? Like, why haven't you built a relationship with them? Why aren't you like going out with their BDM and talking about the business you're bringing them, etc.? And secondly, why aren't you trying? You know, you could at least have said, I'll do my absolute best. I'll be on the phone to them this afternoon. Even if it's ineffective, at least he can try. So I think there's a good example of the opposite of having a black book. having well, if that's a red book, I don't know, but having people that you're trying to use and trying to do sophisticated deals with who just aren't of the high of a high enough caliber, I think that's a good description of the opposite.
We've had a couple of transactions going through recently where with our solicitors on the conveyancing who act for our vendors, and two instances I can think of where Easter weekend, the solicitor was happy to speak to me and update some paperwork that needed to be executed before the end of the tax year. We wouldn't get that normally. You don't get that level of service from people who work 9 to 5 generally, but that's testament to the relationship we have with the solicitors that are in our black book. And we've got another one we've been testing recently where it's turned into the most complicated transaction ever, and she's been great. Actually, it's the first time we've used her and she's been great, and it was a test, and I would use her again. Still within our you know, our senior, our very experienced franchisees, if someone's got a deal going through. But she was really good. She was absolutely on our side, and that communication has been really clear with us, happy to copy us in the communication, etc. So but it takes time to build up those relationships and be comfortable that they are competent in dealing with us, and therefore that the whole of our partners that we can roll them out to. You know, they end their probation and then they're a full member of our black book. You've kind of illustrated some of it, but is there any other benefits to the partners in having this black book that's tried and tested?
The example that springs to mind is one from last week. Yeah, just last week. It was, so we're recording this start of July. It was the end of the stamp duty holiday last week. So Wednesday last week was the 30th of June. So solicitors were just rushed off their feet. Absolutely swamped. Everyone wanted it completing by the end of Wednesday. And on Friday, a franchisee sent me a really detailed WhatsApp and said, this transaction is on the rocks. The vendor is fed up. It's taking too long. And there's a whole list of complaints. Please, can you help? So I called there's obviously two lawyers involved, but I called one of the lawyers, the one that I thought could do most to help this transaction to just get over the line, really close to completion, but definitely wasn't going to complete in the next 2 days, by the 30th of June. It was probably 2 weeks away from completion, but the vendor needed to see some action, needed to see it moving forward. And I left the owner of the law firm a WhatsApp voice message on the Friday afternoon. I want to say like 3 p.m., 4 p.m. It may have even been a bit later. It might have been after hours because I was in Mexico, so we were 6 hours behind the UK. So it might have been a bit later, actually. On Monday morning, in the space of 3 to 4 hours, the guy had phoned me 5 times. And this is in probably the busiest last 2 days of the year for them because of the Wednesday deadline. He phoned me 5 times and I was in meetings. I kept seeing his phone. Like I was speaking to vendors and doing help visits on Zoom from Mexico. And so I couldn't pick up. And then I called him back in a couple of breaks and we missed each other. So we had like a ping pong rally of about 8 calls. He phoned me 5 times and I phoned him 3 times. My opening sentence was, "Thank you so much for like persevering. I imagine you're pretty busy." And he said, "You wouldn't believe it, Frank. It's incredibly busy." And I just thought, and this is for a transaction that we all know is not going to complete in the next 2 days. This isn't one that needs to complete in the next 2 days. 99.9% of solicitors would have said, "I'm super busy. I'll phone you back on Thursday when it's calmed down," or would have just ignored me till Thursday. But that's the benefit. You know, we probably with that particular law firm, oh, how many transactions a year?
A lot.
Yeah, you probably know what I'm speaking about. So I'm just trying to think. We must do 100 to 200 transactions a year with them. I'd be amazed if it's not more than, I'd be amazed if it's not more than 150. That's a lot of business. You know, how many other people do 100 transactions a year with a single law firm? And we've got obviously multiple law firms. So yeah, I think that was the owner of the company taking that much time to help, not me, it's not one of my transactions, I have no financial interest in that transaction at all, to help one of our partners with their transaction to keep it on track. And the reason that partner contacted me is because they couldn't solve it themselves. They just needed me to intervene and help. And that's the benefit that the EPP partners get of our black book.
It's evident across the board that the strength of that relationship is the strength of all the relationships. Mm. So as you say, we can pick up the phone and talk to them and get a response quickly, which goes towards solving the problem for sure. Mm. So it's one of the massive benefits we have. So Frank, it's been brilliant to talk to you, hear a little bit more about the deal and how it was constructed. And as you say, 3 years ago, this is the type of deal that you would have walked away from. We couldn't solve the vendor's problem with the below market value offer that would be our standard, but actually working with partners in our black book, then you were able to solve the vendor's problem and make money out of it as well.
What it's all about.
Brilliant.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Pauline. Appreciate it. You take care.
That was the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast from Ethical Property Partners. Use your podcast app to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode.